Stay tuned for Shootout Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
To celebrate Christmas Eve, Saturday, German authorities said hundreds of investigators have been working on the probe throughout the holiday season. Speaking to reporters in Berlin Friday, Chief Federal Prosecutor Peter Frank said investigators are trying to determine if 24-year-old Tunisian Anis Amri received help from a network of supporters. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is taking diplomatic action against countries that co-sponsored the UN Security Council resolution against the buildup of Jewish settlements in the West Bank and East Jerusalem, which Palestinians want as a capital for a future state. The U.S. took the step of allowing the resolution rather than issuing a veto. White House Deputy National Secretary Advisor or Security Advisor Ben Rhodes said despite the United States repeatedly standing up for Israel, its government had ignored repeated concerns about the growth of settlements.
One of our great concerns is that the continued pace of settlement activity, which has accelerated in recent years, which has accelerated significantly since 2011 when we vetoed the UN Security Council resolution that condemned settlements, puts at risk the two-state solution, as does any continued incitement to violence.
The Nigerian army has captured a Boko Haram camp in Sambisa Forest, one of the jihadist group's last strongholds in the country. President Muhammadu Buhari said Saturday, he said the capture of Camp Zero marked the final crushing of Boko Haram terrorists in that enclave. This is VOA News. The U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation warns local law enforcement agencies across the United States that Islamic State militants have called for attacks on churches and other sites where holiday crowds might gather. This after the group posted a list of U.S. churches as possible targets on its social media sites. FBI spokesman Andrew Ames said citizens are advised to maintain awareness of their surroundings and report suspicious activity. On Monday, Islamic State claimed responsibility for the terror attack on Berlin Christmas Market, in which 12 people died and 56 were injured. Hundreds of Syrians returned to Aleppo Friday to check on their homes after the last rebels left the city Thursday. Residents crossed into neighborhoods and had recently been on the front lines of the battle for Aleppo. Some of them had not been able to reach their homes for 5 years. Russian President Vladimir Putin said Russia, Iran, Turkey, and Syria have all agreed to hold peace discussions to resolve the conflict in Syria. West Africa's regional bloc has threatened to use force in Gambia if the country's longtime leader does not step down in January as scheduled, this following his loss in presidential elections. The chairman of ECOWAS, Marcel D'Souza, told reporters the bloc has a standby force. The regional group has been leading diplomatic efforts to try to persuade the president to step down. Turkey has imposed severe media restrictions following the release of an Islamic State video purporting to show the killing of two Turkish soldiers. The video release came as Turkey is still reeling from the killing Thursday of numerous Turkish soldiers fighting to capture the jihadist-controlled Syrian town of Al-Bab. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
For several hours, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube were all blocked. After the blanket ban was lifted, internet service was reportedly slow across the country, and all sites showing the video were blocked. Turkish mainstream media did not report on the video. While there's been no Turkish official reaction to the video, authorities are quoted in local media saying the restrictions were imposed for the sake of public order. The video follows Thursday's killing of 16 Turkish soldiers by an IS suicide bomber. That was the largest number of fatalities in one incident since August, when Turkey launched its cross-border operation into Syria against IS and Syrian Kurdish rebel groups. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
American actress and author Carrie Fisher, best known for her role as Princess Leia in the original Star Wars movie, is reportedly in critical condition in a Los Angeles hospital after suffering a heart attack near the end of an 11-hour flight from London to the California city. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington.
Small team of technical people who are sort of putting the draft agreement together. The idea is for us to be convened at some point in the middle of the week.
Political dialogue about a transition in the Democratic Republic of Congo is put on hold for the Christmas season.
The reason why my president is happy is because we are now having a united government working together. We are actually implementing the agreement by creating cantonment sites.
The South Sudanese government is pleased with the failure of a UN resolution to impose an arms embargo.
We have told the government and all other relevant authorities to provide a counter proposal to our proposals that we gave them in the year 2012.
And Kenya university staff unions demand better pay. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Negotiations between the government of the Democratic Republic of Congo and the opposition Rassemblement have been put on hold to allow the Catholic bishops mediating the dialogue to celebrate Christmas. This, as officials say, the signing of the agreement has been scheduled for next Friday. For the latest development of the talks, I reach Freddy Mbuyamo Mutungulu, leader of the opposition Congo Nabiso Party, or Our Congo in the indigenous Lingala language, and a leading member of the Rassemblement.
Well, I can confirm that we worked through the night, and I had to come back at around 11 a.m. this morning. But the bishops, as you know, have to join the parishes in the provinces, and today is Christmas Eve, so they have returned to the parishes. In the meantime, what is now happening is that there's a small team of technical people who are sort of putting the draft agreement together. The idea is for us to be convened at some point in the middle of the week to take a look at this. The signing, if everything goes well, is now scheduled for Friday of next week.
So what are some of the areas that need to be ironed out in order for the signing of this agreement to be implemented next Friday?
First, I think it's important to say that the agreement is stressing the importance of this country to preserve the integrity of the Constitution, which means that for President Kabila, this is the end of his second last term in office. He's now going to be seeking a third term. That's one thing. And secondly, during the interim period, until we have the election, it's been agreed that there will not be any attempt, either through the referendum or by any other ways, no attempt to introduce a new constitution or to revise the one that we have. And as the opposition, we think that this is a very important achievement because we've said all along that the fight was about ensuring that this constitution is respected. And the second thing is we've agreed that the election, the presidential election, will take place in 2017. Now, how do you manage the country post December 19th? These are some of the issues that we've looked into as well. And there, I think it's important to say that there is a high authority in charge of monitoring the implementation of this agreement that is being set up, and that body is supposed to be headed or will be headed by Mr. Tshisekedi wa Mulumba, who is, as you know, the head of the Rassemblement.
Since President Kabila will lead the transition, some people are suggesting that the opposition Rassemblement sold out because you are sabotaging the constitution, just like they accused President Kabila of sabotaging the constitution by staying in power when officially his second full year term was supposed to end on December 19, and that you have helped to sabotage the constitution. What do you say to that?
No, that is not true, because as we were having these difficult negotiations, it was clear to everybody that President Kabila, as from December 20th, was just one of the people in this country, like an ordinary citizen. I think the problem that we have is that in the meantime, we haven't had an election. And to make it simple, essentially what we had agreed to is an arrangement whereby President Kabila would be sitting there to wait for his replacement to be elected. That's the reason why it's, you know, we created this body that we're calling a higher authority in charge of monitoring the agreement and electoral process in the country, which will be headed by Mr. Tshisekedi.
What if President Kabila changes his mind and decides to run again, knowing that he has the levers of power in him? Is there a mechanism to stop him or prevent him from doing that? Because this is not the first time an African leader has made a commitment and turned around. So people are expressing concern that what is the assurance that President Kabila will not change his mind and decide to run again?
I think that's a very legitimate concern if you look at the way you know, he's behaved in the past. But at the same time, we have an agreement that is very clear on those issues, on there not be any possibility for him to seek a third term. This is what we have. And we're going to make sure that our people continue to be sort of involved in the political process to maintain pressure on the president. And to do that also, you know, with the support of the international community that has been extremely supportive of our efforts to ensure the preservation of the integrity of the Constitution. You know, this is what we can say. We wanted to make sure that we had, you know, minimum sort of potential for large-scale disturbances, political and social, in the country. But we're going to make sure that the government is run in such a way that you minimize the chances of there being slippages from the timetable that we have set out to sort of in terms of, you know, when the elections are going to be held.
Freddy Mbuyamo Mutungulu is the leader of the Democratic Republic of Congo's opposition Congo Nabiso Party. He spoke with me from the capital, Kinshasa. The South Sudanese government is pleased with the failure of the United Nations Security Council resolution to impose an arms embargo on the world's newest nation. UN experts had warned that South Sudan could be on the verge of a genocide. For more reaction, I reached Petroleum Minister Ezekiel Lol Gatkuoth.
We are happy that the sanctions on individuals, especially the government officials that are implementing peace, and also the arms embargo. For us, the reason why my president is happy is because we are now having a united government working together. We are actually implementing the agreement by creating cantonment sites. The National Legislative Assembly is functioning. People are actually moving to national dialogue that has been launched by the president to unite and concern the people of South Sudan. Why interrupt this process? If you are for peace and you are supporting peace, you should actually be thinking of how you can help this country and the leadership of that country that is implementing the agreement, especially with the President of the Republic, President Salva Kiir Mayardit. It is actually working harmoniously. Why actually creating a venue that can even lead into disrupting the implementation of the agreement? So we are very happy with the failed targeted sanctions and arms embargo on the people of South Sudan.
But the UN experts have warned that South Sudan risk being plunged into genocide, and that the arms embargo would help prevent that because of the ongoing skirmishes of sporadic fighting in parts of the country.
If you assess now, that is the problem always. You're those who are just getting reports and they don't know exactly what is happening on the ground. There is nothing called looming genocide. Yes, skirmishes are there, and they are being dealt with administratively by the security forces. If you actually assess and do a comparison, where we used to be in 2014, 2015, and early 2016, from where we are now, we are actually better off than where we used to be. There is nothing called a war is actually escalating. The country is moving on. People of South Sudan are tired of war. There's nothing. Nothing like that. But people are exaggerating it because they have their own interest to destabilize the government, actually to create unnecessary paralysis so that we cannot move forward to implement that thing. We are calling the international community, and especially the peace-loving countries, those who are supporting us in the council, to really continue to support us so that we implement that agreement. We unite the country, and the country is moving forward. I can tell you, as a Minister of Petroleum, financially things are moving. I was in the OPEC or oil producing and exporting countries as a non-member. Prices are going up. We are actually moving to better the lives of the people of South Sudan. Things are actually getting better.
You spoke about the peace plan implementation. However, opponents say that it's in shambles and that there is no implementation of the peace plan, since they accuse President Salva Kiir of hijacking the peace plan, literally throwing it away and doing his own thing.
Well, this is actually not true. If you look at the process of implementation of agreement, for example, in the parliament, let us just take one institution. The SPLM in opposition, the SPLM-IO, the 50 seats that were allocated to us by the agreement, we selected them, they are there. The 10 ministers that has been allocated to us by the agreement, we have selected them, they are there. The cantonments for the IO forces, they have been agreed in Equatoria, in Baragazan, and in Apanal. And then we are cantoning the forces. As we speak now, we are training joint integrated police that can provide security for Juba. Joint from the SPLM and from the SPLM in opposition. That has never been the case when Dr. Riek Machar was here. Everything was actually standing still. There's nothing moving.
Ezekiel Lol Gatkuth is the South Sudanese Petroleum Minister. He spoke with me from the capital, Juba. Kenyan public university unions have issued a notice to the government about negotiations for better pay. This after the groups demanded the government to table a counter-offer on a collective bargaining agreement from 2013 to 2017. The groups say their efforts and negotiations have been snubbed by the government since 2013 and describe this as frustrating. For more, I reach Charles Mukawa, General Secretary of the Kenya University Staff Union.
The university's staff unions within all the public universities in Kenya have issued a warning and not a strike notice as yet. This is because we have told the government and all other relevant authorities to provide a counter proposal to our proposals that we gave them in the year 2012. And we would like the government and the university council to make good and provide the counter proposal by 3rd of January 2017, so that if that happens, we can then move the next stage of engaging with them to mutually negotiate and agree on a collective bargaining agreement latest 10th of January 2017.
Some people are saying that the unions are pretty much doing this as part of a blackmail, because this will be an election year come next year.
Nothing far from the truth can be said than that. Why are we saying this? That could be propaganda of people who want to use that as diversionary tactics. Remember, our demands, our proposals to the government started in the year 2012, because we are talking about public officers working within the universities in Kenya have not received any salary increase since July 1st, 2010. Now, in 2012, when we put our proposal to negotiate a successor CBA, the current government was not in office. And we have been pushing since that 2012. We have been reviewing our proposals every year. Nothing has come from the government. So therefore, nobody can actually say that it's blackmail. No.
Several governments have often said that there is no money or allotted funds in the budget to meet some of these demands that public sector workers usually make. If this is the stance of the government, that is why some people are accusing your unions of using this blackmailing tactics in an election year to favor the opposition. What say you?
We will never blackmail the government. If the government has got its own failures, let it not blame workers. Where have they been? And we cannot buy this fallacy that the government does not have money. There is so much money in this country. This country has a lot of resources. And that's why we are seeing a lot of money being plundered through corruption cartels. You tell any public servant in this country that the government does not have money, they will not believe you. If the government says that the budget does not provide, our demands that we have currently put on the table are aiming at the coming financial budgetary estimates. Because we know that next year, around March, April, the government budgetary estimates will be done. And that's why we want our negotiations concluded early in January, so that then we can be accommodated in the budget of the year 2017-2018. That is actually our plan, and nothing less and nothing more.
Well, some people are saying some of your demands, 350,000 shillings and a full-time professor taking home 1.9 million per month. Some people are saying that that is better than some public sector workers earn. Your take?
Those figures that you're quoting are in our current proposal that we would like the government to counter-propose. What these men and women are currently earning is a paltry amount of money that cannot make anybody working in an institution of higher learning live like a human being. We want an assistant lecturer to get that 350. That is our demand. But let them bring their counter-proposal. Our proposals are not cast in a stone.
Charles Mukwaya is the General Secretary of the Kenya University Staff Union. He spoke with me from the capital, Nairobi. At a time when most prepare to celebrate Christmas and the break of a new year, some Zimbabwean immigrants in Botswana face a critical dilemma as they attempt to travel back home in time to be with family and friends. For VOA, Martin Ngwenya files this report from the Botswana capital, Habaroni, about the challenging journey which the illegal immigrants face.
Zimbabwean Marilyn Magoni works in Habaroni, but is eager to share a Christmas meal with friends and family back home this year. The 33-year-old lacks proper travel documents and has not been home for over 2 years. Like many other Zimbabweans, she made an unauthorized entry into Botswana to eke out a living. Now she faces a dilemma as she begins the long journey to her hometown of Gweru in the Midlands. She says the Botswana police harass them whenever they attempt to return home without travel documents. Others do not make it all the way to the other side of the Ramokwevana and Plumtree border post, the busiest entry point between Zimbabwe and Botswana. Instead, they are nabbed by Botswana police and detained for days, fined, and then eventually deported. Men making the crossing illegally into Botswana are subjected to worse punishment, with up to 12 lashes on the bare back. Immigrants usually take advantage of the vandalized fence along the two countries' borders, but reaching their destination is not guaranteed as Botswana police and soldiers patrol the area. Sometimes the illegal migrants are lucky and the overwhelmed police exercise leniency. Makwani says she and her fellow countrymen and women at times have to buy their way through by offering the police and immigration officials money for a drink.
It's never easy. The police in Botswana always harass us whenever we are caught on our way home. Since we have no papers, sometimes we have to bribe them because you don't have options.
Thousands of Zimbabweans in the diaspora survive without proper documents to stay and work in their respective countries, particularly neighboring Botswana and South Africa. As she begins her journey home, Magoni says she will keep her fingers crossed that she will make it across the Ramokwevana River, which divides the two countries, and then return to Botswana in January without the regular attack most immigrants suffer. Recent figures show that nearly 1 million Zimbabweans visited Botswana in 2015 alone, while thousands are staying in the neighboring country illegally. Reporting for VOA's English to Africa service, this is Martin Ngwenya in Havoron, Botswana.
A young Zimbabwean has established a successful business in Johannesburg by making everyday items like handbags from waste material, especially plastic. 35-year-old Thamba Tamvuma is a passionate environmentalist and recycle artist. He says his philosophy is simple: throw nothing away, because any rubbish has the potential to be recycled and transformed into funky and functional product. For VOA, Darren Taylor reports in the first part of a series about people handcrafting high-quality, unique products in South Africa.
At a taxi rank in Johannesburg, commuters and drivers stare at a lithe man in jeans and a white T-shirt as he bends down to collect plastic packets from the dirty, oil-stained concrete.
It's something that I've always been passionate about, litter, since I was a child. You know, it's always been something that's annoyed me, like people throwing away rubbish on the street. You know, I'm from a small town.
As a child in Mutare, Zimbabwe, Thamba Tabvuma began crafting art from litter, using cardboard toilet rolls to make painted flowers. This, he says, was protest art.
To show people that when they throw things away, that it doesn't disappear. They think that once they throw it away, once it's out of their vicinity, they think that it disappears into the ether, but it actually doesn't.
When he moved to South Africa 10 years ago, he says he found treasure troves of trash wherever he went. He says he was extremely upset at South Africans' capacity to litter, but it did spark the idea for his business.
I would go to Joburg City at night after 10 o'clock when it's dead, and then go through the bins and pick up what I could.
Workers look on, some shaking their heads, as Tabvuma scavengers at a dump site.
No, they think I'm crazy.
He sees value in almost everything except rotten food.
I've just got an old gate. You know, milk cartons, the wrappers from the Lay's chips, newspaper, Coke cans, old wire, computer motherboards. We use that. We get a whole jewelry range, which we make from computer motherboards, old wine bottles. After we've had some consumption of them, yes, sorry.
2 years ago, Tabvuma opened a store in Johannesburg's Melville suburb called Republic of Recycle. Its motto in bold black letters on a wall reads, "Oh, what a load of rubbish." In an inner-city workshop using industrial sewing machines, Tabvuma and his assistants craft handbags from white fabric plastic bags, blue and purple hats from plastic washing powder bags, and much more.
So this here, it's a milk carton, so we just kind of cut it up in a specific way, and then we kind of fold it together, and it becomes a wallet. And so these backpacks, yeah, I also make these from billboards, PVC from the billboards, yeah. So this is a laptop case, computer bag, file holder. We use also like the billboard.
He says visitors to his store are usually shocked when they see what he makes from things they usually throw away.
So we even have a sign in the shop that says, "It's all touchable, it likes to be touched." Because people are a bit apprehensive and they don't quite believe that it's made from what they see.
One of Tabvuma's favorite items to make is carry bags made from the huge white plastic bags that once held 50 pounds of maize meal processed by iconic South African company Iwisa.
The branding has that nostalgic, you know, element to it. I was in England and I gave someone a bag and they love it, eh? Because I guess it reminds them of home and, you know, exactly the kind of...
His goods are in such demand that he now pays people around Johannesburg, like the woman who cook food along roads, to collect extra waste materials for him.
It kind of creates a small economy around the waste, you know, so the waste actually becomes a commodity.
But he still roams riversides and delves into dumpsters.
I mean, I find people throw away the most amazing things. I've got an old chair, an antique chair, which I found in a bin. I've just put it together myself, but, you know, going through trash is amazing. I mean, it's fun. I mean, it's really cool, actually. Everyday stuff, you know, like the crisps and all that stuff, and, you know. Yeah, but it's quite...
Tabvuma says he's happiest when his products inspire people to recycle, keeping the country cleaner. Wherever he goes, his mantra is, even though we're all different, we all stay on the same planet. We need to be more responsible about how we take care of it. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotty, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. And right now it's time for music from our African collection. These are what we have for you today.
I want to love you, baby. So make you dance for me. I want to love you, baby. So make you dance for me. I want to kiss and hold you, baby. So make you whine for me. I want to kiss and hold you, baby. So make you whine for me. Hey, dance for me. Mommy, dance for me. Oh, dance for me. Mommy, dance for me. Mommy, dance for me. Oh, whine for me. Mommy, whine for me.
I want to love you, baby.
So make you dance for me. I want to love you, baby. So make you dance for me. I want to kiss and hold you, baby. I want to kiss and hold you, baby. So make you whine for me. I want to kiss and hold you, baby. I want to kiss and hold you, baby. So make you whine for me. Hey, dance for me. Mommy, dance for me. Mommy, dance for me.
but the feeling in my heart, it makes me say, oh,
best. You got today, I owe it all to you. I best. Martin Ferregola. Nyomaka, nyoma, ale nyomaka, nyoma, nyomaka, nyoma. J More N's.
If you see my langa, when you see him, you go know. Say me, I like to jolly. Anytime she dey by my side, my langa na Calabar, baby. The girl you said no be small. If you love your woman, follow how they go. Malanga dey sweet me pass tomato just. Malanga na African woman correct. Malanga too fresh my baby. Yo yo yo. Malanga na African woman original.
Kekelebe.
Oya baba lumegu mama ye.
Kekelebe.
Mwatebe lumegu baby aku. Baby aku.
Kekelebe.
Oya baba lumegu mama ye.
Kekelebe.
Mwatebe lumegu yo 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 yo.
Kekelebe.
Chéri atona kitoko. Ma beauté a ba fama.
JB Wallo fake me Los America. JB where you go, you the popular. Jamomo, win a dollar. Monso singing ni be barata. Arupo, Akuwana. Stronger African lover man. That's give you number one gigi gram. Then you big money cause you bigger than my African ladies on your Jupiter. Sexy ladies to my Jupiter. All my ladies is your Jupiter. Body yo, body yo. Mama yo, mama yo. Daddy bless you, mommy yo. Life is sweet with mommy yo. Chevy, only you give this up for Canada. Only you want to marry Agatha. Only you give money to Saraka. Only you cause all the Mangomora. Chevy, want to take me to Los America. Everywhere you go, you the popular. Chamomo, win a dollar. Once I see you, be part of it. Chamo, 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 chamo.
Jam on my town, jam when some talk in my town, jam, I didn't hear you my town, jam, remember your brother, jam, jam on my town, too much money they worry you baba, jam, who's it on gaga, teacher who me God bless your mama,
mama yeah, mama yo, daddy bless you mommy yo, life is sweet with mommy yo, daddy yo,
Chevy only you gave
visa for Canada. Only you want to marry Agatha. Only you kiss money to Saraka. Only you cause all the Mazomora.
JD want to pay me Los America. Yeah, I want to go, you the popular. Chabobo, win a dollar.
Once I see me, you the party.
Chabobo, chabobo. For Canada. Only you want to marry Agatha. Only you use money to Sarah. Only you cause all the Mangomora.
JD want to fake me in Los America. If you want to go, you the popular.
Jamomo, when I don't know.
Monsa singing in the barata.
My African lady is your Jupiter.
Sexy lady is to my Jupiter. All my ladies is your Jupiter.
Body yodo, body yodo.
DJ Music, Paraguay. Mr. Dims on the beat. Humble Smith.
Let's go. It's a mugging aga. It's a sugar sisi, you look so kinky tonight. My sweetie Porezi, if Nanyam baby, oh. My loving Diana, my love is here to stay. African lady, oh my. Plenty, plenty nice desire. He did light my fire. And I know my fire for you, eh. Oh my. Plenty, plenty nice desire. He did light my fire. And I know my fire for you, eh. My sisi, oh. Fine, fine love, eh. Your sweet, sweet love, eh. Baby, I make you kiss me. Your fine, fine love, eh. Your sweet, sweet love, eh. Baby, I like your style. You just sweet me as you just smile. See the way where you just shine. Try nobody, oh, eh. It go good, eh. Make me see papa, mama, and blessing go the flow. Try, we go just stay, oh, eh. Plenty, plenty nice style. Light my fire, and I know my fire for you, eh. Oh my, plenty, plenty nice fire. He dey light my fire, and I know go fire for you, eh. My sissy, oh baby, make you give me your fine, fine love, eh. Your sweet, sweet love, eh. Baby, I make you give me your fine, fine love, eh. Your sweet, sweet love, eh.
And that was Music from the Continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, Managing Editor Shaka Sali, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, the ever-friendly Al Santos. We say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, nobody knows the mysteries which lie at the bottom of the ocean. I'm your host, Peter Clotter in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
A little more than 2 years ago, Yemen's Houthi militia swept south from its northern strongholds. The rebels were supported by Yemen's former president, Ali Abdullah Saleh, who resigned after 30 years in power due to peaceful protests in 2011. The rebels seized the country's capital of Sana'a and much of the country's northern territories and took over the government, expelling the administration of sitting president Abd Rabu Mansur Hadi. In March 2015, as part of an effort to push the Houthis out of Sana'a and restore the Hadi government, a coalition of Gulf Arab nations launched a campaign of airstrikes against the rebels. And, as is usually the case in war, it's the civilian population that suffers. The United Nations estimates that of around 9,000 people that have died since the escalation of the conflict, at least half were civilians. The United States has called on all parties to the conflict to take every possible measure to avoid civilian casualties and to investigate those incidents when they occur. You can see from the humanitarian situation, which is dire and deteriorating rapidly, that it is urgent that we try to bring this war to a close, said Secretary of State John Kerry recently at a press conference. He spoke in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, after a meeting of diplomats from the United States, the United Kingdom, Oman and Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates, as well as the United Nations Special Envoy for Yemen. The purpose of our meetings was to talk about the challenge of bringing the war in Yemen to a close and how to move forward with a plan to stop the fighting and to negotiate a political settlement, said Secretary of State Kerry. We believe that only the UN-proposed plan, properly negotiated over time, is the way to bring this war to a close. The UN proposal outlines a comprehensive agreement whose details would be settled in negotiations. It includes a sequence of political and security steps to lower tensions and build confidence, temporary appointments to facilitate the period of government transition, and the formation of a national unity government. None of the measures would go into effect until all parties have signed a comprehensive agreement. It's a framework for an outline that will bring the negotiations to a reality, said Secretary of State Kerry. We think that's the only way to resolve this.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.